she would either like to see some male sports reporters in some tighty whities, maybe, and a cut undershirt, or possibly sideline reporters and now female co-anchors and whatnot, not dressed to the nine like they're clubbing.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Zebra Stripes Podcast, episode six. What is it, six or seven? Six?
I think it's seven.
There we go, seven. Episode seven, Zebra Stripes Podcast. I'm Coach Gene Clemens. That is Coach Whit LeJour. Let us be among the many who have probably already wished you a happy new year, but you can get it coming from us as well. Whit, how was your New Year's Eve into the new year?
New Year's was great. I'm glad I'm in charge of one thing, by the way, and that's I'm in charge of counting the episodes. So
I like it.
My production skills are, you know, are varied, but that's among them. New Year's was, a quiet one. That's what we tend to do around here on New Year's. We're not going to go out with too many of the crazies and kind of watch a good movie and have a good dinner and kind of celebrate together. And it seems like every other year we watch the ball drop, you know, so we did not see midnight this year, but last year we did. And, you know, you were kind enough to actually call me and wake me from a coma at about 12:20, I believe. So am I making that up? Maybe I dreamed that you called me. Yeah. Can we confirm that you, in fact, did call me, or I was dreaming about you on, a few minutes after the said hour?
No, you can confirm that I did call, because I figured, okay, you know what? You know,
yeah.
Whit and Mary Beth, they may not be long for the new year, but maybe they brought it in. So let me try to, you know, throw a little happy new year in. And of course, when you answered, I was like, oh gosh, I'm so sorry. You sounded dead to the world at that point. And I was like, man, didn't really mean to
wake up. I'll tell you what, I don't need Tylenol PM. I've got this app with loons and a crackling fire.
Okay.
And it puts you into a deep, I recommend it. It puts you into a deep hypnotic state quickly. I rarely last more than 3 to 4 minutes when MB puts the loons on, we call it. I mean, it's good night, daddy bear at that point.
Yeah. See, for me, it's thunderstorms.
Oh yeah, we graduated from thunderstorms. You know, that's when we were younger, we used thunderstorms. We went to loons, Maine loons.
Yeah, see, I the thunderstorms, just I think it's something within how I grew up. Whenever there was a storm, my grandmother made us turn all of the everything off, TV off, lights off. And so you would be sitting there in quiet and all you could hear was the rain, and obviously with nothing to do, you just fall asleep. So that's kind of how it is now. Anytime that it rains, especially if it's a thunderstorm, I just get really sleepy. So that whenever
did
I
regret,
I'm having an issue with the sleep, that's what I roll with.
Like that. Did your grandmother also ask you to wait 30 minutes before you went swimming?
Yes.
After lunch?
Yes, she did.
Yeah.
She also... Everything ran up the light bill. That was a joke, but it was the truth. Like, anything that you did was running up the electric bill. I was like, okay. All right, Graham.
I think parents just wanted a 30-minute break. I think that's how that whole swimming thing started.
Is that what it is?
I believe so. I mean, because I don't believe you're going to get a cramp and drown, by magically jumping into the water.
Yeah, I don't believe that either, because I've eaten food in the water. So... It's one of those things where once I was older, I was like, debunking some of these myths was.
Hey, let me ask you this question. I've got a lot of questions today.
I like it.
Yeah. Well, how many days are you good for? I'm stealing this. I got to be, I got to be above board here. But how many days are you good for saying Happy New Year to people? Like, are you 24 hours a week? Scott Zolak, you know, ex-Patriot quarterback who does a nice job on air, you know, just gets pretty riled up at folks all giving them Happy New Year, you know, a day or two later. But how long do you go? Got me thinking.
I'm next day. So, like, January 2nd, I'm usually finished. But in this case, with New Year's falling on a weekend and you not really seeing the people you would normally see, you know, I think it's proper, especially going back to work, to extend it to a Monday. But normally, January 2nd, it's the New Year's here now. Okay, let's get it going. I also feel that way about Christmas decorations, too.
Oh, I got to take my lights down then. But the text, I'm assuming the same rules would apply to a text then.
So. Yeah, I don't really text people beyond the second, you know, Happy New Year. But
yeah.
However, I think if for some reason someone didn't see me for a very long time, like if they hadn't seen me, I wouldn't be like upset that they said Happy New Year to me. I just would be like, it's more like people who are in your everyday regular kind of movings that after the first day, I'm not going out of my way to say Happy New Year to people. Like, you get it. We're here now. And where we are is interesting because we're in this world of, you know, New Year's where you get to celebrate different ways. And so what's some of the difference between waking up to a new year where it's, you know, in your case, 20, 25 degrees, as opposed to what I was dealing with on New Year's Day, which was like 78 and sunny.
Yeah, well, I would have been loving it if it was 20, 25 degrees, because in fact it was about 8 or 9 degrees. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, and I'm just gonna, I'll just go back to the idea that, you know, it just gets you thinking about months down the line in the new year when you're me and you're waking up to those conditions. You just go, okay, now bunker in, same old, you know. New year, same weather. Okay. So, I mean, that's, and then we talked about it in an earlier podcast. Now it's about, you know, character building through tough temperatures. And I will add that, you know, spending the year in Phoenix, with Mary Beth many years ago, playing golf on New Year's as well as Thanksgiving and maybe the day after Christmas was a spiritual experience. Like, for a New England guy, I said, whoa, I felt guilty. I didn't even know you're supposed to feel that good about everything.
You felt guilty about like being out?
Yeah, like, I don't know if someone's supposed to feel this happy, actually. You know, I think it's that Puritan thing.
It was interesting because you get almost the opposite effect down here. There are so many people who wake up to 70 something or almost 80 on a Christmas and go, man, I wish it was, you know, I wish it was cool. I wish it had a more Christmassy feel, because we have this preconceived notion of what Christmas is supposed to look like and feel like. And so sometimes you find yourself longing for that, you know, that Christmas thing. And I think you quickly get over it when you're down there, because you realize how good you have it. And
tell him to shoot me a text. Tell him to shoot me a text and we'll run a house swap.
I'm sure.
How many people do that?
I have no desire.
No, but for the people you're talking about. Yeah, for the people you're talking about, tell them you know a guy up here in Maine, and he'll give you a place for like three, nice 4 days. And
nice place.
They want to go snowshoeing. They love it. Maybe a little cross country skiing.
Absolutely.
Build a fire.
Maybe a little tubing. Get up to the mountain. Tubing.
A little hot cocoa with peppermint schnapps.
Okay. Yeah. Definitely. Okay.
And I'll like come it. Down and.
And play golf.
I'll come down and stay in there. Yeah, I'll come down and play golf. I'll come down. Ideally, ideally, if it could be someone with a pool, you know, or maybe, you know,
yeah, oceanfront. Pool, oceanfront property is always good. You know, somebody is going to see a lot of oceanfront property very soon is Antonio Brown, because as of a little bit after halftime of the game on Sunday, he was no longer a part of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think it's interesting in this case. I don't really know what happened. And I think everybody on the outside is speculating on what happened. The one thing I do know is I don't necessarily – there's certain things we've always known about Antonio Brown. One is he likes attention. But two is he's always loved football. So there's this weird thing that comes out at the end where Bruce Arians says, well, you know, he refused to go back in the game. And I'm like, that's so strange, because he's so close to bonuses that going back in the game, especially in that particular moment where they were down and they were going to be throwing the ball all over the place to try to get back into it, he was going to have a very good chance of reaching some bonuses. So for him not to go back into the game, it made me think, well, why? Why? Because Bruce Arians clearly said he asked him a couple times to go back in the game and he refused. But no one ever says, no one ever talks about the why, other than there may have been an injury. And I'm like, well, there's medical people all over the place. If there was an injury or there was not an injury, shouldn't someone know? There's some things that we're probably never going to really know about what happened that led to the blow up. But regardless of how that happens, you can never, like, that's never going to be okay. Like, you can never handle a situation like that and think it's okay.
You can't, but I will say this, right? We live in a copycat society. So when I saw it, I immediately or almost immediately said, oh boy, here comes the next, like, some high school kid's going to be upset with his coach at a basketball game, and he's just going to take his uniform off, chuck it in the bleachers, and run out of the gym.
Wait, that's already happening. Like, that's happened. Oh. Like, oh. That's not something new. What he did wasn't something that we've never seen before. We've just
I've heard people saying.
We've just never seen it in the NFL.
Okay, so I'm hearing people say it had never just only not in the NFL.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, I have had a player take their uniform off right there in the middle of a game because he was upset about what happened. I chopped it up to them being a kid, making a really, really awful decision. You never want to completely and totally condemn a kid for it, but there has to be harsh punishment behind it. But right. I've seen it happen in basketball. I saw a kid take his uniform off and climb into the stands and sit with his parents.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the only thing that comes close to it, you know, thinking about it a little bit for me, but I haven't thought a ton about it, but Sprewell, right? The choke.
Uh-huh.
You know, kind of, right? So in this case, instead of, right, coach tells you, I don't remember the whole, you know, what led, but, right, coach tells you something you don't want to hear or, boom, 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 boom. So instead of just exiting stage right, you just go after him.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact thing behind it, but I believe there was words that were said that felt threatening. And, you know, I think sometimes coaches have to remember that we're not what we were when we were playing, and these people are elite-level athletes, and we might want to temper how we say something. Or at least have a relationship built up to where when you say something that may be off color or not really the best, they know that it's coming from, you know, a place of love, not like necessarily you just wanting to cut them down. It's funny because this isn't the first thing, you know. The Houston Rockets just had that incident with Christian Woods, who left the stadium or left the arena after getting into it with coaches. So you're seeing it now where I don't know if it's a new world order. I wouldn't want to go that far, but the part of empowerment that no one talks about is when people take that level of empowerment to, I don't have to listen to what you say or do things the way that you want me to do them, or even take the quote unquote verbal abuse that you might be throwing my way. I'm going to react in another way. It's crazy because I come from an adversarial background. Like, I don't know if those things end well, you know, for me. I'm just not going to be okay with you deciding that you want to pull a Sprewell on me. Like, something's going to give. So, like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's a very interesting time that we find ourselves on. But I think in the case of someone like Antonio Brown, without knowing anything about it, I don't feel right. bad for him.
Right.
I don't right. feel bad for Tampa Bay. They knew what they were getting yeah. into. He knew what he was getting into. And so everybody just has to take responsibility for themselves. I wish him the best. And I'm not gonna put something on him and say he has mental health issues because I don't know him. I think yep. that's such a cop-out way of trying to dismiss someone's behavior or even to kind of to disrespect what they've done in just saying that they have mental health issues, because we all have essentially mental health issues. We all deal with times where we need to check on the chicken. You know, we need to check on the mental and make sure that we're yep. good. But yep. I wish him the best. I still want the Bucks to win. So, you know, we'll keep moving from there.
I think your empowerment point, I think, is really good. And where that continues to go in all occupations will be interesting how it plays out. And to me, you know, what is, you know, professional, like acting in a professionalism, acting like a professional, regardless of occupation, right? So at one point in time, you know, you want to be a professional meant whatever it meant, and you acted in certain ways and kept a lot of stuff to yourself or in-house, so to speak, right? And today, you know, there's plenty of things where, you know, we've drawn new lines around, you know, being a professional or even being a class act. You know, what are the lines around being a class act or this and that, right? So I think you raised some good points. I think it'll be interesting. So,
yeah. I, it's just you never can tell where any of this stuff is going nope. today. I saw a movie. I don't know if okay. you've seen it or not. Don't Look Up. A DiCaprio piece. I tend to watch anything that Leonardo DiCaprio is in because I believe him. I believe he's one of the best actors of our time.
I first saw him in Titanic. Was that among his first?
No, actually. I think his first okay. thing was What's Eating Gilbert Grape. When he okay. was a kid. I don't know if that was the second. I know he was on some things. Titanic was his, I think Titanic was his first like blockbuster. Yeah.
Coming out party.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But just
so I saw it. Really I saw it too. So okay. What do you got?
So I thought it was brilliantly done, first off. I thought what they were getting at had nothing necessarily to do with the asteroid or the meteor right. or whatever it was. I think it had everything yeah. to do with how our society today takes everything and flips it into an angle to do something else. What really struck me was the political satire that was going on, where like there was Just Look Up and then the Don't Look Up people. And yep. they had essentially, the political parties had weaponized the politic or made it into a political thing.
Yep.
Which I think we're seeing in today's society with everything that's going on with COVID-19
And yeah, the vaxxers and the anti-vaxxers.
Absolutely. They usually come right down the line of political affiliation.
Yeah.
You know, for the most part, obviously nothing's 100%, but you know. It was interesting to me because the idea of we can't just tell people the truth was something that I kept coming back to in the, you know, in the story. It was how you package the truth and whether or not it was good for, you know, somebody or was going to make someone money or get somebody popularity. That's when it was okay to tell people the truth. But if it was going to hurt someone in some type of way, hey, let's just hold off on telling the truth right now. And us being our own worst enemies, the human race. I think when you think about global warming, when you think about pretty much any negative that's happened to our world since we started overpopulating it, like, we're our own worst enemies. We're the ones who cause, you know, oil spills in the oceans. We're the one that cause, you know, the shifting in the glaciers and polar ice caps melting. Like, these are all things that have come because of stuff that we've done. And yet, while we know that we're the cause, we refuse to do the things to reverse what's going on, or at least to help to limit the damage that we've done. And I think that's something I thought was really interesting in the, you know, in the movie, and how they made it almost to where you would go, no, this isn't real, until you realize, no, this is pretty much how we act.
Yeah. So I agree with you completely. Mentioned it last week with you, that it got lousy reviews, but you know, from my, you know, simple brain, and family that I watched it with, we had some of your same reactions and you know, I it plays on, I mean, Hollywood's done this sort of thing before. The one that jumps out at me, back in the day is Network, right? Which kind of went, along the same, lines of the outrageous truths and reality in the way that, you know, broadcast news brings it to us. Unbelievable book by Neil Postman, who was a professor at NYU, called Amusing Ourselves to Death, written, I'm going to say it was 85, but might have been slightly before that, a little postscript by his son. But the premise being how television has shaped our reality, if you will, that, you know, obviously an entertainment culture, anyone taking, you know, cultural studies and all that stuff knows that stuff too well. And now today, you know, where we're at, like you're saying, I thought it was well done. I'm going to be interested to see, you know, the greater public, whether, you know, whether they have the same, I don't know. I'm kind of curious how people are going to react to it.
I wonder if the negative reviews come because it's just too smart.
Yeah, maybe.
I think sometimes, like, smartly done movies get railed on because they, like, the just your average Joe public's not keeping up, or at least just doesn't want to keep up. But
yeah.
Even within that, isn't that kind of what we're talking about, what they're talking about in the, yeah, in the movie? So there's all of these, it's a lot to think about. And I like when movies make me think. That's one of the,
me too.
It's one of the, yeah, biggest things. I like when a movie makes me think. I like to be submerged into the world, kind of forget my world for a while, but I like when they leave me with some things. It's the same with a book. You know, when a book leaves me with some stuff to ponder, That's my type of medium. I like to be moved to thought beyond what I've just, yeah, seen.
Yeah. I mean, the bottom line is, again, we've got to develop, and this is in some books too, but we, you know, the community, our communities are broken down, beginning with the family and other institutions and trust in institutions. So then if you don't have any sense of community, then how do you reach consensus? if you don't have consensus, then when you confront issues of the day, whether they're comets in this case or COVID, you know, pandemics or climate change, then if there's never going to be a community or and thus consensus, then you're going to have a hard time confronting said issues of the day. And we're in a tough state, which case now you might be better off in a more authoritarian, right? The Chinese would say, well, that's your democracy's gone a little amok. But I don't know.
I'm always struck by the fact that we don't allow for changing of mind. Like, yeah. one of the things that I always get upset about is if you feel some way, if you think something, if you said something one time, then that's just the way you feel, say, or think forever. Yeah. There's not a lot of room for you to have your receive new information, digest it, and go, you know what? Upon further review, you know, or now that I have more information, I feel this way. And to me, it's one of the reasons why we have so much issue with race relations in our country. I think it's why we have so many issues with gender, with gender relations in our country, is because when we finally do see what someone wanted us to see before, the person that wanted us to see it before goes, oh, now you want to see it? And then you're almost bashed on both ends. So it's like, if you have someone who's racist, and you know, they say racist things, and you say you shouldn't feel that way, and you bash them down, and then they go, you know what, I understand. I've heard all of these people talk. I get the emotion. I get the feelings. And then people go, oh, you're just saying that because people are coming at you. It's like, well, wait a minute. Like, what are we doing? And I think you see that a lot in all walks of life and all types of things. You don't see the changeover because people are almost afraid to change their thought process, because they're like, well, I'm getting killed over here. I'm going to get killed if I change. I might as well just stay where I am and just call it a day.
Well, speaking of changing thought processes, I know one thing that Mary Beth would like to see changed. She would either like to see some male sports reporters in some tighty whities, maybe, and a cut undershirt, or possibly sideline reporters and now female co-anchors and whatnot, not dressed to the nine like they're clubbing. Because I can't watch a sports broadcast, whether it's an actual game or whether it's a analytical show, for instance, that features women, typically attractive, that aren't dressed in a way that, according to Mary Beth, and I think she's right, but aren't like, I don't see the men dressed the way that she is. Mm. And I said, yeah. And I said, what, you don't, that's just the way that person likes to dress. And obviously she looks at me and just says, you know, get the F out. Like, that is not the way that person.
I would say yes to a certain extent. Yeah. I think that she's right, that there is an over-sexualization of women on television.
Right.
However, I think that over the last however many years, that power has been shifted from men making decisions on how women look on television to women taking that on themselves to go, I want to look like this on television. I remember having a conversation with Jemele Hill, whom I would not put in the category of really gorgeous woman. I think she's not ugly, but she's not Kerry Champion, you know, who is a ridiculously gorgeous woman on television. And they were talking, and she was saying that she started off as a writer, so appearance didn't matter. And you can see that when she first came on screen, she was still dressing as if somebody that was not going to be on camera. And she said, I would start looking at myself on television and going, ugh. And so a lot of the changes that she made came from wanting to look better on television herself. And I think that a lot of these women now, I was actually talking about it on with a colleague of mine. A lot of these women see the opportunity for their own personal brand to grow based off of not only their intelligence or their skill or their ability, but also, you know, the fact that they're, you know, they're attractive. And I don't think they're looking at that and going, somebody is trying to over-sexualize me. I think they're embracing that for themselves. And that might be the difference in what we've seen in the past, back when, you know, Mary Beth is 100% right. People were being told, you need to wear this, you need to look this way, because this is why you're on. Versus you're seeing someone like Mina Kimes, who, again, I wouldn't necessarily put into the category of bombshell, but has ascended up the ranks of ESPN because she's funny, because she's smart, because she's willing to be self-deprecating. Yet the more she's on television, the more you start seeing her appearance become more of, you know, one of the people who you might say was there just because they look good.
Yeah, so the question for me, I guess, to leave it would be, are they making a deal with the devil? Good for them. I mean, I'm all the power to them. Are they making a deal with the devil? And are they making it harder, say, to be the next Doris Burke or some such similar? So are they making it more difficult on the next woman who doesn't look a certain way to need to look a certain way to get on the air? So
you'll come back to me at some point. I'll come back to you at some point. You'll come back to me. It's me. It's not you.
Yeah. Okay. I just thought maybe I said something again. On the subject, we should get off this subject before it's just too late.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I don't remember where we were. Oh, yeah. College football. I know that you're not a college football person. I know you're not a college football person, but you're definitely going to be into this game. We've got a rematch.
I'm a college football person this time of year.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah, because it's the playoffs, right? I got you.
Right,
okay. We're back. You said, I think last week you said that you came back in once they developed the playoff. It made a little bit more sense.
Yep.
Before we get into this Bama Georgia rematch real quick, do you think, after what you've seen, do you think that college football would be helped, or at least big time college football would be helped, by an 8-16 team playoff? Or do you think that's just, we know how this story is going to end based off of how some of these teams are than others?
Yeah, I would support the expansion of the playoff because, again, like we know in sport, on any given Sunday or Saturday or Monday night. So, and just like Bama this year and Georgia, but like everyone, all the best teams got nicked up. And so when you expand that playoff, you open up the possibilities to upsets, which obviously is what sells the NCAA basketball tournament. So I do think it would be expanded, and then that expansion might actually help some other schools narrow the gap, because we had two semifinals, which I sat there watching saying, okay, if I was, you know, team 5 through 12 on the outside looking in, I'd be saying, well, holy smokes, if that's the best you can do after a month of practice, get rid, like, Jesus, we could have given them a better game than that. So, you know, I just.
So I think the interesting part about the playoffs and the expansion is the idea of preparation. I think that most of these teams are dead in the water. You give Alabama 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it is, to get prepared for you. I think most, especially if there's something on the line, you give these, like you said last week, or maybe it was the week before, they're playing with a different deck of cards than these other coaches are.
Right.
And so, like, if you give an Alabama 3 weeks, it's going to be hard to beat them. The interesting part goes, if you change to an 8-16 team playoff format, now there is no 2 or 3 week gap in between games. Now it's a week by week by week. It becomes more attrition, but it also becomes who can make that adjustment faster. And you might overlook something. You might not be able to fine tooth comb things the way that you know that a Nick Saban coach team does. And that's where you see a Texas A&M be able to come out and put a game plan in where they're able to run out and Alabama can't run them down at the end. But if you keep it at a 3 week clip, I mean, it's going to be hard to beat a team like Alabama. It's going to be hard to beat a team like Georgia. They're just so talented. Their Jimmies and Joes are just so much better than your Jimmies and Joes that when you add in the ability to coach that they have, it's going to be difficult for anyone. I think that's the beauty of the NCAA tournament and why you normally see so many upsets on that second game of the first week than you do on the first game.
Yeah, another you're smoking hot today. I mean, you're thinking at a high level. So I agree with your point about preparation for sure. And you know, there were people that said, you know, there's never going to be a playoff. And then there were people that said, well, there might be a playoff, you know, but I'm not exactly sure when, you know, the Bulls will relinquish enough power to have it happen. So I would say the same. Look, at this thing will be expanded. I don't know when, but I it'll be sooner rather than later.
I think what
it would be. Yeah.
No, I was about to say, I think what helped everything progress is that essentially all of these bowls are owned by the same entity.
Right.
So bowl mania is essentially just ESPN. We're going to show you a bunch of football games. And so now that paves the way for them to say, hey, we're going to sacrifice some of these bowl games in order to give you a playoff because all the money's coming back to us anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Bama or Georgia, who you got? If you're going one or the other.
Well, yeah, I mean, bottom line, I said it. I'm obviously all in on Georgia because I said the field would win. And as I watched that game, I said, okay, that's just another idiotic statement I made as I watched Bama roll. Look at me. But I've got to stick with the field, which it is. I've got a great field team. I've got the best field team. I've got a team that already beat them, for God's sake. So I picked the field, and I'll go with Georgia. But, you know, in my head, I say, you know, it, Bama finds a way. I think it's going to be a hell of a game. And again, I'm not – my eyes told me Georgia's got the speed and the athletes, the size, the talent to stay with Alabama, which again, obviously they do because they've done it. And when I looked at Cincy and when I looked at poor Michigan, I felt so bad for Harbaugh,
non-competitive.
Oh, I mean, and I just say, okay, like you were just, I mean, what did we send out the varsity versus the JV team? I mean, that's the last game I saw that looked that ridiculous.
I've got to correct you somewhere because Alabama actually beat Georgia already this year.
No, right, but then Georgia beat Alabama.
Nope.
Oh, who the hell beat Alabama?
Texas A&M beat Alabama earlier in the season, and then Alabama came out and smoked Georgia in the SEC championship.
In the SEC, I was thinking, okay, thank you. See, that shows you in the regular season, I'm not paying enough attention.
It is. Okay. Well, you know, it was one of those things that coming into the game, Georgia was a favorite and a pretty good favorite. And I think Nick Saban's words were, you know, most of the time the rat poison that you guys mean in the media put out is very, very bad. But this week that rat poison was great because it was just motivation for his guys. All he heard was Georgia's got the best defense ever. Georgia's this, Georgia's that, Georgia's this. And it came out, and now the disrespect is still there because Georgia's favorite to win, even though Alabama's beat them before. I think the game comes down to quarterbacks. And while I appreciate what Stetson Bennett's done, while I think he's a good quarterback and he deserves every right to be the starting quarterback for the University of Georgia, he's not the Heisman Trophy winner. He's not Bryce Young. And I think that's where it is.
In the famous words of my one of my best college friends, Coach, I got to disagree with you there. Great halftime line. You know, talking about confronting coaches, I mean, this was in a Division III JV basketball game, as a matter of fact, if I'm coming completely clean. And we were losing to a team we'd already beaten, Tompkins Community College. And Coach had something to say, and my dearest friend said, hey, Coach, I don't want to be a dick or nothing, but I got to disagree with you there. And I've obviously remembered that so fondly my entire life that when I want to disagree with someone, that's typically what I'll say. I don't want to be a dick or nothing, but I got to disagree with you there, Coach. And there was not a fight or anything else that ensued. I think we all, you know, fell over the, you know, freaking bench we were standing on or sitting on, and went out and just steamrolled the other team because, you know, I mean, God damn it. That was like one for the Gipper. Let's go win it for Brendan. What I disagree with, sorry, I digress. What I disagree, I think the quarterbacks are even. Okay, very different. I think the quarterbacks are even. All due respect to the Heisman Trophy. That thing is just a beauty pageant of a contest anyway. Rarely is the Heisman Trophy winner the best player in college football. So I don't put much stock in who the Heisman is. In this case, I put almost none. And I'm going to speak like a true footballer that I'm not and say this game will absolutely be decided in the trenches. It's whoever comes out on the offensive and defensive lines and imposes their will on the other, that is the team that will win. Take it to bank.
Okay. So I just want to have it on record as you saying that Stetson Bennett and Bryce Young are the same guy.
Well, I didn't say they're the same guy. I said what I said was they would not be
the talent level is the same.
They're both major college quarterbacks. They both get it done differently. Which one is Trevor Lawrence and which one is Mac Jones? I don't know. Which one is this guy and which one is that guy? Most people do. I'm saying, you know, I'm saying Stetson might be Tom Brady. Like, he's got that it, which, you know, looking at his story, the little bit that I have, he's got something. That
absolutely.
And so that sometimes, like, can even be magnified in big games. Like, he's living his dream. And so I would not discount. I'm going to go on record and say that. He's going to go out and play a whale of a football game, making plays that, you know, and he may end it with a Doug Flutie-like miracle in Miami, if you want predictions.
Yeah, I mean, all of that is definitely possible because anything is possible any given Saturday, Sunday, Monday, as you said. I just like to point you to the 421 yards and three touchdowns that Bryce Young rolled up on a defense that everybody considered to be one of the greatest defenses in the history of college football.
That's and what as Bryce I tried Young did. And as I tried to tell you in past episodes, but will one more time, listen, I don't care about yesterday.
Forget about yesterday. We're on to Monday, as Bill Belichick would say. We're on the.
That's it. We're on to Cincinnati. That's my mantra, by the way. Here, we're on to Cincinnati.
Speaking of Cincinnati, I know we got to get out of here and wrap it up, but You know, we're back playing after the break. COVID. You know, how are things coming back into the second half of a season? Or the meat half of the season. How about that? Not even second half, but.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's an incredibly exciting time of year in its own right on all levels of basketball. But like in the prep school for us, we're back after a break, just getting started again. So it's all about, trying to get the conditioning up where you need to, and then getting some execution back and trying to build on the things that, you know, you already have been doing well. I don't really think it's about improvement for a while in my world. I think it's about limiting the damage. Like I said last week in a completely, another context, I just think you got it. You're back to not beating yourself. And then a few weeks from now, maybe you can start taking that next jump again. It's a really interesting time. I think it's similar Division III. It's got a little bit less of a break, but they've got to restart. My son's up there, Hobart, restarting with games Friday, Saturday, this coming week. And I've always said this, anytime you're playing after a break, right? I mean, some breaks it'll help you because maybe you get a chance to put some things aside. Other breaks hurt you because maybe you lose your momentum. So if things have been going well, like they have been for us, you're trying to build on that momentum, knowing Jesus, wish we could have kept going. If you were someone that was struggling a little bit, then maybe that, just like it as an individual, sometimes you get away from it for a bit, an injury or something else happens. Kemba Walker got away from it because he was taken out of the lineup, goes back in, starts performing well again. So, sometimes the break is good. Sometimes it's not so good. The teams in the Division I level, right, conference, now the guys that had to play guarantee games and get their brains beat in now get into their conference, and that's really the only record that matters in one bid leagues and everything else. So it really is a reboot for everyone on a lot of levels. Pretty exciting.
I think one of the cool things that I like about coming back from the break is you always see that one or two people that come back looking a little bit different than when they left. There's a weird like Christmas break, holiday break, like growth spurt, talent spurt, like maybe things like sink into the head of somebody that maybe didn't quite get it the way you would like for them to get it before the break. They come back and they just have a little bit better understanding, helps them perform better. I've had it help happen to me where I've come back from a break after having a first half of the year where I was okay, came back after the break and really kind of caught my stride. I don't know if part of that came from the fact that I was playing football and then transitioned into basketball, but I've seen it to where when you come back from the break, there's some people that just come back and they're like, okay, I'm ready now. Like this is time to go. And it's always fun to see stuff like that happen.
Your lady like you, like clean shaven, fresh cut. Is that what's going on? Because like I think I commented on your cut and your look in a previous episode also, but you're looking especially dapper. You're on fire today. Again, a huge point that you're making about, I just had a kid eating tacos at our island here last night, and I said, I think you might have grown an inch or an inch and a half in the past 3 weeks we've been gone. And really, yeah, I think you have, which is somewhat absurd. But like you said, more often a kid will come back and surprise you. Like the deck always gets reshuffled somehow, some way, exactly the way you're talking about, which is a neat thing to see. I've had kids too, who've told me, I don't know, I'm trying to think of two guys come to mind on a very good team in 09 that I was coaching. And I don't know if they said it in the day they came back or the day they were leaving, but they say, "Coach, you know, I was talking with, you know, this one teammate to another, both good players. Hey, look at it. You know, we've given you about 60% of what we got." I said, "Jesus, really?" I said, "Yeah, you know, I thought you'd been pretty good." "Ah, coach, you know, it was after the break." He said, "Nah, we were talking during the holiday, and, you know, man, that chance to recommit," which is that intangible side you're talking about, when a kid, just the light comes on a little bit. So that is the bright side of the of getting that chance to step away and take a break. So kids have a chance to digest a little bit and do that. So it's all, that is a really, really neat thing.
You know, there's a kid that I remember back from my time at Bridgeton who I think did something very similar. Tyrone Hansen. I remember him coming back that second half and just had I don't even know if it was an improvement in the game. I think it was an improvement in his confidence. Like, I think he felt like, yo, I belong here. Because, I mean, those teams were loaded. Those teams were stacked. And so you had to really be an alpha among alphas in order to survive. They kind of just, you know, they existed in a world where you had to rise to their level, or they were just going to leave you behind. And he came back and had a confidence about him, you know, that I didn't see before we left after, you know, the Christmas tournament or whatever. And he really brought it on and actually did really well for himself, earned himself a scholarship to Nevada off his play. And really was an instrumental part of bringing home a NEPSAC championship that year. So,
no, he was. That was Mark Fox too, back in Nevada before he. I think he went from Nevada to Georgia, if I'm not mistaken. But, at the very least, when it happens, it gives a coach depth. You know, it gives you all of a sudden you got another guy. In the case you're talking about, he's a frontline guy who steps up even more. But it might be a guy on the bench that suddenly is giving you more. And so that's always a good thing. And I know we were talking before the pod. We'll have to bring it up next week, maybe. You know, what is too much depth? You know, when is depth a problem? Some of that. I thought that was a neat concept you're talking about too. So you obviously were taking either your Prevagen or your vitamins or CycleBar. Maybe, like, you haven't told me yet, but CycleBar has agreed to a promo with us. I don't know.
Clearly, I'm working. Going on. I'm still working. That's for sure. But no, I definitely want to have that conversation with you, because I go back and forth with it, and I feel as if in certain sports it's a great thing, and in other sports it can be a good thing, but it could also be a hindrance. And so I love to sit back and have that conversation with you next week, but that's going to be our time.
Yeah, and I want to add on to that, you know, the difficult player too, you know, sort of, and not the Antonio Brown thing necessarily, but the idea that, okay, when either depth and or when that depth includes a difficult player or two. So remind me of that, because, again, I thought that was pretty good stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, it has been another great episode of Zebra Stripes Podcast. I'm Coach Gene Clemens. That's Coach Wick LeJour. Make sure that you follow us anywhere that you get your podcast. Make sure that you follow us on Spotify. Leave a comment. Like it. Make sure that you're subscribing. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear some feedback. Until next time, y'all take it easy. And make sure that we will not tell you Happy New Year when we see you next Monday. Have a good one.